The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jaya Bhattaka Swami on June 5th, 1983 in Atlanta, Georgia. The class begins with a reading from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, verse 3 through 5.
Translation. The Blessed Lord said, O sinless Arjuna, I have already explained that there are two classes of men who realize the Self. Some are inclined to understand Him by empirical philosophical speculation, and others are inclined to know Him by devotional work. Not by merely abstaining from work can one achieve freedom from reaction, nor by renunciation alone can one attain perfection. Nahi kaschit kshanam api jatu tishtatya karma krit karjate hi avasa karma sarva prakriti jaya gunai. All men are forced to act helplessly according to the impulses born of the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. Our founder Acharya, founding spiritual master of the Krishna conscious movement who came to America in 1965, seated there, Bhaktivedanta Swami, Prabhupada. So he gives an explanation to these verses, which I read. It is not a question of embodied life, but it is the nature of the soul to be always active. Without the presence of the spirit soul, the material body cannot move. The body is only a dead vehicle to be worked by the spirit soul, which is always active and cannot stop even for a moment. As such, the spirit soul has to be engaged in the good work of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it will be engaged in occupations dictated by illusory energy. In contact with material energy, the spirit soul acquires material modes. And to purify the soul from such affinities, it is necessary to engage in the prescribed duties enjoined in the shastras, the sacred books. But if the soul is engaged in his natural function of Krishna consciousness, whatever he is able to do is good for him. The very nature of the self, of the soul. What do we mean when we say soul? Soul means in the body the living principle, the living energy, the actual living being is the soul. As was explained here, without the presence of the spirit soul, the material body cannot move. The body is only a dead vehicle to be worked by the spirit soul. Yantarudami mayaya. This body is a vehicle. And we are higher than a vehicle. One of our devotees in the airport when he was meeting people met a coroner. And they had a discussion. What is the difference between live body and a dead body? So he admitted that a dead body, their eyes have no life. There's this lifeless. There's just no movement, nothing. There's something missing. Now, some type of scientist would have us believe that there's some chemical is missing. But the Vedas say that life and consciousness are of a higher order than chemistry, or physics, or biology. That actually, the consciousness is on what we will call as a transcendental platform, above material energy, or an anti-material platform. That is who we are. We are not the body, but we are the higher spiritual energy within the body who is conscious of the movements of this body, the pains and pleasures of this body, and when we leave this body, the body is dead. If we analyze, who am I? Am I this hand? Am I this arm? Am I this head? You say, no, this is my hand, my head, my arm. My body, my mind. Who is the I? The I is the self. The self should be realized, known, understood, and utilized. Engaged properly for achieving the natural, real happiness, which is our birthright, which is our very nature. Unfortunately, there is no institution in the modern society to train anybody about anything beyond the body or the gross thought. If you want to find out about the body, they have medical colleges. But if you want to find out about the living force which is making the body go, there is no place to study. This Krishna conscious movement is actually the place for those postgraduate students who would like to study this particular science of the self. Who am I? Where have I come from? Where am I going to? What is life? The reason why we refer to this book, this is a Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita means the song of God. Gita means song. Bhagavad means God. God not in the ordinary sense, but Bhaga means all opulence. In Sanskrit, each name has got a definition. Bhaga means opulence. Bhagavan means one who is filled with opulence. What type of opulence is? All wealth. There are many rich people in the world, but nobody can claim to monopolize all the wealth. But Krishna, he has all the wealth. So all wealth, bhaga. What other opulence? All strength, power. With a fraction of his energies, he's sustaining the whole material universe, millions and millions of galaxies, universes. What we see in this material sky, visible sky of millions and millions of luminaries, is considered to be one viswa in the Sanskrit language, and there are Ananda Koti Brahmando, Avishwar Brahmando, there's unlimited millions of these. This is just one of many. Out of billions, millions. So, he has got all the power. Enough power that he doesn't have to be here to manage the affairs. And if someone wants to demand, let me see God, he doesn't also have to come here to show himself. Just like if somebody says, I don't believe there's a president of the United States. I don't believe it. Even the papers say, so I don't believe it. Even the radio and television say, I don't believe it. Unless he comes right here before me, I don't believe him. Who cares for that guy? I think Reagan's going to come here and say, you know, all right. But if you do some good work for the country, he'll call you there and he'll give you some medal. In the same way, those atheistic type or doubting type people who are saying that unless I see God, I won't believe Him. It's not the way. You can see Him, no doubt, but you have to know the way. It's not the way. You do something that God can see you, something to help His mission of uplifting humanity, He will recognize you and bring you to Him. Or He can come. But He's not just somebody's lackey that He'll come on our beck and call. One has to actually develop a spiritual consciousness to be able to understand and to be qualified to realize even the soul, what to speak of the Supreme Soul. So, Bhagavan, all power, all strength, all beauty. The most beautiful person. There's so many beautiful actresses, actors, natural beauties. But the creator of all this beauty is ultimately even more beautiful. It's like one of Krishna's name is Shyama Sundara. Actually, Krishna is a type of transcendental black color. Not the material black, because Krishna is also more effulgent than the sun, than millions of suns. Although He can turn down the effulgence to a cooling level. At the same time, He's like a color of a dark bluish monsoon cloud. In India, you can see these clouds quite frequently. I don't know if you can see in Atlanta. But like a thunderstorm cloud, similar to that. As close as you can see in the material world. But He is all attractive, all beautiful. So, that's another opulence. Power, wealth, beauty. Then He also has fame. There's no one more famous than God. Fame, He also has knowledge. He knows everything that's going on everywhere. Always. Past, present, and future. And He has all renunciation. He can create the whole world even. He doesn't have to stay here. He doesn't really care to be present. He's renounced. If He's wanted, then He can come. But He can intervene. Otherwise, He can stay aloof. And so many other ways He's renounced. So these are the basic bhagas or opulences that He has in full, complete. But He reveals Himself only to His intimate devotees. So He's speaking this particular sacred book. Therefore, it's called Bhagavad Gita. Krishna was on this planet 5,000 years ago. Some scholars argue the exact date, but He was actually here on the planet. He spoke this book, 700 verses, to His devotee Arjuna, who was a great prince and a great devotee. And also a yogi. Although he was a married man, he was a yogi. He knew all the various types of yoga, especially bhakti yoga. And the place that he spoke the Bhagavad Gita, Kurukshetra, is still there in India, just between Delhi and Kashmir. You can find one place, I believe it's now in Haryana, which is called Kurukshetra. That is where the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. Still, every time there's a solar eclipse, thousands and millions of people go there to bathe in some sacred lakes which are there. So, the very first verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Dharma Kshetra, Kurukshetra. This was spoken in the religious holy place of Kurukshetra. So why Krishna spoke this? Because this particular knowledge, He knows. He can impart to us. Just like if you ever buy a Sony tape recorder, you go to the Sony company for the manual, how to repair it, how to open it. It comes with it. So Krishna is not such a fool to give a whole universe without a manual that goes with it. What is the universe? How is it working? Modern science is just scratching the surface. So this is the Bhagavad Gita. Now whether or not you accept it to be the song or the words of God Himself, then you don't have to immediately accept or reject. I would appeal to you all to rather just give an open ear, even hypothetically, that all right, if God were speaking this, take it that this possibility is there. Then the things that He's saying, how do they make sense? How do they fit in with the scheme of things? Just like here He's saying, all men are forced to act helplessly according to the impulses born of the modes of material nature. You can analyze whether or not what He's saying is true. You can experiment, just like science. Somebody says H plus O, hydrogen, oxygen, you combine the two, you get water. So then you think, are all men forced to act helplessly according to the modes of material nature? When a person is angry, is he in control, or is he forced to act? When a person is overwhelmed by different, you can even do a study. And if you study carefully enough, you'll find that the different modes that come over our mind, different sentiments of charitability, of goodness, or of passion, lust, or anger, greed, that these impulses are what control us. So therefore, either one mode or another is going to overcome us. And we'll act in one way or another. Someone may act out of anger and hurt someone else. Someone may act out of mercy and help someone else. Someone may act out of selfishness and just try to get something for oneself and not care about helping or hurting anyone else. But nobody can refrain from doing something. So the different types of yoga are meant to understand the difference between the material nature and the spirit, the self. What are the differences between all the dead matter, trees, plants, which are already just lying dead, and the living entities? This is one of the questions, and there are many other questions. Basically, if we can know who we are, then we can only start to understand what is real happiness. If we don't understand who we are, then how can we understand how we can become happy? You know, most people, what they're doing is they're simply being swept along by the whole environment and flow of the society around them. They're not able to, so to speak, stand aside or objectively analyze what's going on, because they're identifying with their body. They're identifying with the nation the body was born in, the family the body was born in, the friends the body has accumulated, the attachments the body has made. And this way a person is completely wrapped up. And normally you ask someone, what's your plan? Well, I'm going to work this summer, and I'm going to go out to the park, and then I'm going to go back to school in the fall, or I'm going to continue my job. The vision is, you know, very short-sighted. So what are you going to do with your total life? What is going to be the sum total result? You see, modern society said if you can work very hard, earn a good living, have a good house, have a good car, have a good name, this is success. You should be very happy. Right? When George Harrison came and visited us in Mayapur, he told us that now that he had become world famous, his special hobby was how to dodge the newspapermen. Because I happened to be in Bangkok the day he arrived there, but he didn't know I was there. But he met us in Mayapur, the world headquarters in India. And I noticed in that newspaper that when he checked in the hotel leaked it out that he's in our hotel. So I commented that you were in Bangkok. I saw in the newspaper they asked you to do some benefit for some charity like that. So then he mentioned that yes, because of the rush, I had to use my own name to book the hotel. Otherwise, normally we always use another name, my secretary's name. And he said that then they started reminiscing how they had dodged the newsmen through Indonesia, through Singapore, through Australia, New Zealand. This is their, if they can get through the countries without getting photographs and in the papers, that's a special treat for them. Right? People work their whole life to get name and fame. Then when you get it, then your special joy is how to avoid the press, the media. So, actually what people are working for, even when they get it, they're not satisfied. Because that's not the ultimate purpose of human life. You see, these books, they have been spoken thousands and thousands of years ago. Their examples may even be somewhat archaic. But they're still as practical today in terms of spiritual understanding as they were in those days. There's one example given that if you put a bird in a cage and you give in the cage all type of facility, maybe you put a little fan, you give some nice cushions, put a picture on the side, put a little mirror, anything, you can just make it, you know, silk, put it, whatever you like. You know, air condition it. But you don't feed the bird. Then, will that bird be happy? Similarly, if you take a fish and you take him out of water and you give a similar nice box, everything, but if he's out of water, he won't be happy. But actually, our element is not just having so many material things. The American dream of just having so many material luxuries is all kid stuff. That's a kid's dream. Now that we're into the 20th century, 1983, that dream should also expand to understand that the real dream should pursuit of happiness. We should face up to it. That people are not happy just by surrounding themselves with all the material possessions. It may be a good second, but it is not the real thing. Because happiness is coming from inside. And what that happiness is, nobody can pinpoint. Why? Because they're trying to understand happiness through their material nature. We are not this material nature. Although we are connected to this body and the pain and pleasure of the body, we can perceive, we can relate with that. But it is not enough to satisfy, it's not complete enough to actually meet our full demand. Just like trying to put an ocean into a bottle. Our desires are so great, the body is so limited. Just like tonight we're having a feast. For some people, they like feasts. In fact, some people, when they taste very good food, naturally their appetite increases. One time we went to a feast in India and our spiritual master was with us. He said, I have no appetite. But they said, nice, hot, delicious prasadam. He said, just by seeing the prasad, my appetite is gone. Especially by smelling. So, but what happens, even though our eyes may be so big, right? Even our desire may be so much, but after we just finish one or two little plates, we're already up to here. Right? Even we'd like to eat so much more, but our body doesn't have that capacity. It's an example I'm giving. Or any material enjoyment. The body has got its limitations. But our appetite is more, because the appetite is seated in the mind, which is greater than the body. And the original desire is in the soul. It's in the living force. And that's much greater even than the mind. So even if you absorb yourself in intellectual activity, just like recently they say that those people who are completely absorbed in computer programming, that they become, practically speaking, impotent for sexual activity. They get so absorbed in their mind that their women, they lose their appetite, men become impotent like that. That means that if your mind is completely absorbed, then even your body will become satiated for that time. But even then, that's not completely satisfying. Even if you absorb the mind, actually, until one comes to the spiritual platform, one cannot achieve full, complete satisfaction. So because the nature of the self, the spirit, the living soul, is to be always active, so the natural form of yoga is a yoga of action, karma yoga. And when karma yoga is purified with love and devotion for God, then it becomes bhakti yoga. Or devotional loving yoga. Yoga means to unite or to link up with the Supreme. So when that connection is there with the Supreme Source of all opulences, power, wealth, fame, renunciation, beauty, knowledge, material, spiritual, the source of all happiness, then we actually become completely satisfied. Completely satisfied. We don't look outside for more than just to maintain our body or more to maintain a reasonable, healthy and comfortable situation so we can go on with our work. But for our actual satisfaction, we take it directly from the Supreme Source. Now, some people may say, well, how do I know? Prove it. So many different things. I don't believe. That, of course, is anyone's prerogative. Now, philosophically, we can give so many proofs. But ultimately, logic has got its limits. If a person wants to go on completely discounting everything just as a basic doubt, even avoiding common sense, logic, various type of reasoning, that person may do so. But why it doesn't affect a fixed up Krishna devotee, a practicing yogi of this Krishna yoga, is because just like if a person comes up to you when you've just eaten a meal and said you haven't eaten. You take this food. You say, no, I'm full. Oh, no, take some more food. I don't need it. I just ate. No, no, I don't believe you've eaten. Well, who cares if you believe or not? I'm full. I can't eat anymore. I'm filled. So, a person, how do you know if you're satisfied? That question sometimes people ask. How do you know if you're satisfied? That question can only be asked by a person who is not satisfied. Because someone who is satisfied, he knows it. That means just like you're filled up, you can't eat it, you know that I'm filled up. So when spiritually a person becomes satisfied, that he can experience a sublime feeling where all of the mental and physical activities at that time are actually also satisfied. Not only that some ethereal, spiritual level is satisfied on some intellectual or spiritual plane, and the mind and the body is not satisfied. No, when the ultimate source of the total mental and physical structure, the soul, the powerhouse, the driving force, is completely satisfied from the direct spiritual contact and spiritual union to devotion with the Supreme Soul, then automatically a person becomes satisfied and it is complete, right down to the most gross level. So sometimes that satisfaction a person in the beginning achieved just for a few moments while chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Because they may chant for some time well, then sometime they may not be very regular. So in this way, they may get just a taste of that satisfaction, and then it may fleet away from them. Therefore, one is recommended to take association of the devotees, to come and associate, to be friends with them, to make one's own house, a type of spiritual sanctuary where one can go and chant, make the house centered around spiritual cultivation. Without that, there's no meaning for being a human being. Human being means higher intellect. That means to develop a spiritual environment. The material environment, that is all right for kids or for animals. For those who are undeveloped. But it creates in the long run a type of havoc or golmaal. It creates utpatayaiva kalpate, a great disturbance in society. So actually this Krishna conscious movement is trying to bring in harmony in the world. Our only obstacle is ignorance. The people are not understanding who they are. They're identifying with their body, with their temporary culture. When they see anything they don't understand, they fear it. From fear comes hate or comes anger. So this ignorance is the obstacle. But for those who are intelligent, who have some broad vision, they could at least appreciate that this is a movement for uplifting people from material consciousness to spiritual consciousness by a very ancient authorized process of chanting mantras or vibrations which actually liberate the mind from its gross association and give it a spiritual association. Mona means mind, pran means deliverance, mantra means to deliver the mind. So this Hare Krishna is the great mantra because there are many mantras which are secret, which cannot be chanted by everyone and anyone, because there are so many rules and regulations for chanting those, Gayatri mantras, Bija mantras. But this is called Mahamantra because anyone can chant or repeat. The process is simple. You just start to repeat Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. In this way, by chanting, the consciousness becomes elevated and you can achieve the supreme perfection of human life. When you achieve it, then you know that. And it's documented what stages you go through. There are levels. Not that just you jump up to the top, but you go step by step by step. So, just for those who are interested, who are the friends of the temple, or who are interested in this type of meditation, we have a special organization called FOK, friends of Lord Krishna. So anyone who's a folk, one of the folk, one of the friends of Lord Krishna, they can come Wednesday. You can see our Balabhadra Prabhu and give your name if you like. Otherwise, just come by every Wednesday night. There they have informally 10, 15, 20, depending. Many has come. They have a little japa class, chanting of Hare Krishna for 10, 15 minutes. Show different video shows on reincarnation. Video on festivals in India, festivals around the world, and sometimes with cooking classes. Another practical question and answer on a very informal basis. Men, women, husband, wife, everyone is welcome. The idea is that we want to let people become acquainted with these principles so they can practice in their own home. And if somebody is very eager to end this whole material life and achieve a full spiritual life, they don't want to go out again and again in this cycle of reincarnation, then of course they should come and take private counseling how to do that with some of the senior devotees or the spiritual master of this temple. We're here simply to serve you. So we thank you very much for coming, and we hope that you utilize the service and bring your friends so they may also come and utilize the service. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Tonight I'm leaving to Miami, and tomorrow at 1 o'clock I'm flying to Bolivia. Then I'm going on a tour of South America to Chile, Peru, Ecuador, and Colombia. And I'll be coming back here for our big festival on the 25th and 26th of June. Then I'll be going back to India. Will you be there? Yes? No, I'll be back in September. He describes in the Bhagavad Gita, Jayjata Ma Prapadyante, according to how they are surrendering to me. Kamsta Taiva Vajamyaham, I reciprocate with them. He also reveals himself to the atheist. The atheist says that I don't want to see God. So for him, he doesn't appear. In his life, he's not there. Except Krishna says that of sure things, I am dead. So whether you're a theist or atheist, everybody has to leave their body. That's the sure thing. So even the atheist, they see God as dead. Which you can't avoid. But the devotee, they don't see that fearful form of the Lord. It's not fearful for them. Because they know that it's like taking one shirt off and putting on another. Rather, they see that Krishna is our very dear friend, well-wisher. And according to how they are surrendering to Krishna, Krishna reciprocates. Even when one starts to ask Krishna that I want to actually become happy, I just want to know what is the truth. I want to have bona fide spiritual master to guide me. Different requests and one is desiring even in the mind, just hoping that I wish I could figure out what is the real situation. How will I actually be happy? If one is sincere, then even then Krishna will start to reveal himself. He'll lead one to a spiritual master. He'll help one in different ways. And that goes on and goes on. You talk to the devotees who are going out and taking risks, going out and preaching sometime in dangerous places. How Krishna helps them in various ways. And then, ultimately, when one's pure enough, Krishna gives one spiritual vision. Not that you see Krishna with flesh eyes. Because he's Satchidananda. He's made of eternal knowledge, blissful knowledge, eternal blissful knowledge. He has no bones and veins. He's not. He's a spiritual form in a different dimension. So we also can have that vision developed. It's given to us. Just like people, they can astral project. They can see subtle creatures on a subtle platform if they develop that type of practice. They don't even realize that it was given to them by Krishna. They think that I got it because of my own effort. And because of that, they sometimes get stuck up on a certain level. But because the devotee keeps his consciousness focused on his actual relationship with nature, with the Supreme, with everyone else, so he continues to progress until full enlightenment. Therefore, Krishna said of all the yogis or the transcendentalists, the devotee is the most intimately united with him. And Krishna has no trouble giving you that spiritual vision.
What is the role of the women in Krishna consciousness? And some of the brothers in here, I know, I just want to say this, downtown they have a food line that they set up every day. I just wanted to say that I thought it was a serious, you know, beautiful expression. Because many people have, you know, brought that about, you know. There's a lot of winos and a lot of other people we call, you know, you know, just down there, you know, these brothers come up every day and serve a hot meal, and I think that's really beautiful. I want to ask a question. What is the role of women in Christian consciousness?
Why did you want to know that?
I see a lot of men, and I don't see a lot of
well, probably because a lot of them are in the kitchen right now. Cooking the feast for you. That's one of their roles. Everybody's role is the same in the sense of serving, but the services may vary according to one's ability. Right? There are some, just like having children, the mothers are having the children. There's one of the roles also to raise the Krishna conscious child and try to give that child a chance to become a perfect human being. Of course, it's not within our complete control. When they grow up, they go whatever way they want, but to provide them as much of a spiritual atmosphere as possible. So to do that, you need a nice, healthy combination of Krishna-conscious wife, Krishna-conscious husband. So most of the women in this temple, with the exception of one or two single women, most of them are already married. That's a phenomenon. In some places I see that many, just like here in Atlanta, we have many, many friends, of Lord Krishna. They're practicing in their homes. And men and women, many, hundreds, but recently, in this temple, more men have been joining as far as full-time. But a couple of years ago, it was more women. Sometimes it just goes through various cycles. In New Orleans yesterday, three men walked in. But the previous week before, four women came. I think we'd have to get a, some special information why this is happening. I can't answer. But basically, our door is open to everyone. It's up to any individual how active they want to be. Ours is not a program where we try to force people. It's something that has to come of their own accord, but we try to provide the facilities that as much as one wants to progress, if it's just to come and take a little hot food downtown, that's all right. That's also, because that food is also blessed food. They want to come here and here for 15, 20 minutes and then go, they're welcome. They want to stay for a half hour and take the feast, they're welcome. They want to come every day, they're welcome. If they want to live here with us, they're also welcome. Or if they want to come every so often and learn and what we're doing and make their house into a little spiritual ashrama, like in India, and we're also willing to go and set them up in their house to make a meditation room, make a beautiful atmosphere. Basically, we're trying to just encourage people. Some people may take several lifetimes to achieve progress. And those who want to are very serious to achieve progress in this lifetime, actually right to the completion of our cycle of birth and death, to the complete realization, then they can come and practice full time, be guaranteed of success. So those customers are rare, like diamond customers. But we're open for all kinds of customers. Anyone who wants to get a little spiritual peace, understanding, we're ready to give any help that we can give. Hare Krishna. Do you have a question? Pardon?
What does it mean when a person keeps his time in office? Repeat
This is because, as it describes it, we're forced to act helplessly according to the certain modes. We're born in a certain situation, we grow up in a certain situation, and it's very hard to get out of that type of cycle. You see. By very hard work, sometimes the person can actually break that type of situation and slightly move or even, you know, move into a different cycle. But then one falls into that particular trend. But that's why it said to actually come out of this work trend where one is like just coming again and again doing the same thing without any spiritual, without any kind of real development. The dynamic way of doing that is to become spiritually awakened, to become Krishna conscious. Then you change your karma. You immunize yourself from the material impulses by becoming receptive to the spiritual magnetism, the spiritual attraction, and that will pull you out of the material impulses which are keeping you going around and around in the same track. So if you chant Hare Krishna, then you can actually break that trend and come into a higher realm. Otherwise, it's very difficult because you're bound by so many actions from this life, from previous life. Just like Ravi Shankar, he's a great musician, sitar player, world famous. The Prabhupada revealed confidentially, don't have to tell anyone, that he was the musician for 9 births. This is after his 9th birth. So on each birth that they take off, they bring with them in the abilities and the desire to do music and to be absorbed right from their childhood, right from their birth. They're born in a family of musicians usually. And that the culture is there. Because it's sometimes it's not only from this birth, but it's like that maybe from one birth or five or nine births or even more. Sometimes a person may be born as a scientist, birth after birth trying to figure out something. He's so absorbed that when he dies, he's so unfulfilled, he hasn't discovered what he was looking for. Again, he may take birth as a scientist. I mean, as that type of, in that type of time, to allow him to continue. The type of higher justice that a person is unfulfilled wants to complete that particular train. They're allowed to do that. Sometimes the trend is good, and sometimes it's neutral, and sometimes it's very bad. But no matter what the trend is, people can't easily get out of it. Unless their karma shifts, somehow they're coming to a new level of karma, where suddenly they get some break from previous activities. Just like Prabhupada had a dream where this is, he revealed that after he met John Lennon, he had a dream that John Lennon was took him to a house in Calcutta, and there was a big merchant's house, wealthy. And he revealed that in the previous lifetime, that not merchant, but the big musician's house, that John Lennon was a musician, but he was very wealthy and he was very generous. So he was fairly wealthy, he's generous, he used to give a lot of charity. That's why in his next birth he took birth and became very wealthy, because he was getting the result from all of his charity. So like that, a person just slightly moves from birth to birth. So someone may be working off some bad karma, then suddenly one gets the result from good karma and see a sudden change in their life. But to get out of that whole chain of karma, there's some secret. And you can start that freedom movement by actually chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Ram Hare Hare.
One surrenders their ignorance and their stupidity with you, then they don't.
When someone surrenders their ignorance and stupidity.
Does it help?
You want to donate the ignorance? What are you keeping for yourself? No, you see, the point is that if one can realize that it doesn't have a very complete understanding, or that basically one is under the influence of ignorance, illusion, then if one has faith in a spiritual master, and one puts one under the care and direction of the spiritual man, just like a doctor. You have some disease, you go to the doctor. The doctor gives you the treatment, the medicine, and you follow it. If you feel better, then you know it's successful. So like that, we have also our spiritual doctors. They're known as Guru, Acharya, and they have their assistants. So they'll give advice. Then one, if they actually have that humility that I'm not in full knowledge, I'm in ignorance about my spiritual nature. So let me follow the instruction of these spiritually advanced people. You can try it. And if you see you're getting some progress, you're becoming spiritually healthier, then you should continue. And ultimately, then you surrender means, then you agree that for the rest of my life, I will continue just to follow the spiritual advice and direction of the master, of the spiritual master.
Yes, I don't know which path, but my mind is going like this.
You should settle down to any one path and then continue on that until you, if you reach a dead end, then go into a next one. Don't just say that, well, because I don't know which path to take, I won't take any path. Then you won't learn. Better even you take the wrong path than just to stay perpetually in nowhere. Because if you sincerely do the wrong path, you'll know it's wrong in no time, if you're sincere. But then you should be sincere enough that if you see it's wrong, have that strength, I'll reject it until I find the right thing. But actually, if one should try to find what is the right path and take that, what is a more sincere path, where you can see that people are improving spiritually. This is the last segment of this question. No, you can ask one. This is your last chance.
I was in touch with Krishna,
That's called Maya. Maya means that which is not, but that which is separating us from Krishna. The material nature is actually a cover. In our pure state, we can see Krishna every day. Just as much as you can see other human beings. But if you're sick, if you have cataracts over your eyes, you can't see. So we are now in the material illusion, therefore we can't see Krishna. That illusion is called Maya. When a person starts to fall away from Krishna, that means they lose their spiritual connection. Maya has two purposes, to bring us down from our spiritual status to the material conditioning, and then to keep us there. So you have to fight against that by coming here, by associating, by eating Krishna foodstuff, and by chanting. You have to struggle to get back. Just like if you fall down, then you have to somehow struggle and stand up again. The older you get, right, then if you fall down, it's one more major. A little kid falls down, he gets up, falls down 10 times in a day. Right? So when we get a little older, it's harder to change. If we fall down, sometimes we may not have that type of stamina to get up again. That's why it's advised we should start spiritual practice in our early life. Because then we have the stamina that if we fall down or if we have this difficulty, we can just continue. But in any case, if you're determined, you can again connect with Krishna. He's not out of touch at any moment, out of reach rather. Then if you're having difficulty, you specially chant the name Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivas Adi Gaur Bhaktavinoda. So write that down and you chant that many times before chanting Hare Krishna, and then that will bring Krishna to you much quicker. Hare Krishna. Hare Bhakti. Why don't you get out the things for prasad? It's time for the buffet. Get it out while we're doing the last question.
Just clean it out. So by chanting Hare Krishna, one becomes satisfied like this. And so the test for one is one is satisfied, that the humility is satisfied. But we can also, other people also claim that they're satisfied also. So does that mean satisfaction is subjective?
Well, people may say they're satisfied. I'm not talking that kind of thing. Someone's coming up smoking 3 packs of cigarettes a day and, you know, has all these crutches. You see. And they may say, well, I'm satisfied. That just means that they're rather relegated to the fact of staying on that level. But the fact is that they're dependent on so many material crutches that for the time being, they may consider, well, this is enough. But do you know that they can't maintain that situation? Even if they achieve that type of satisfaction based upon having so many material crutches that for that moment they have a nice mate, they have a nice house, they have a nice this, they have a nice that, but they can't maintain that. They're either going to lose it or it's going to lose them. And plus they have to struggle so hard to maintain all those little things, to be able to have the house, the car, the this, the that. They have to work like anything, in anxiety that they may lose it, in fear of so many different things. So their level of satisfaction, we admit that there's some happiness in the world, but that level of happiness is so minute, it's just like a drop. And that's very flickering. So that everyone may achieve for a short time some material happiness, and some may even maintain it for a while. But the actual spiritual happiness, when you experience it, is different than that. It's so much fuller and so much in greater depth that there's no real comparison. But to actually understand that, one has to personally experience it. It is subjective. Just like a person may say, well, I'm satisfied. But someone can see the person may be a nervous wreck, maybe strung out, but I'm happy. Just like a man you go and see in the hospital, there was some devotee was visiting some friend or something in the hospital, and then there was somebody that had the tubes up his nose, tubes here, tubes everywhere, and he was in an oxygen tent with the plastic all around, and he was whistling Dixie. Right? And someone asked him, how are you feeling? Feeling pretty good today, right? But it's practically speaking, guys, in hell. He's got tubes everywhere. But maybe from yesterday it's feeling better, because maybe the pain was so bad yesterday that today he's like, you know, feeling a little better. But say, yeah, pretty good going on. But anybody can see it. If that's happiness, then even a Krishna conscious person in the same situation, you see, he's not materially, doesn't identify with that material feeling. One day you're a little better, next day, like today, sun out, oh, it's feeling good. It's raining out, don't feel good. It's not that type of a superficial thing. It's actually in depth. But it is subjective, you personally experience. Objective meaning other people, they may also see. People see, though. I'm flying all the time on the airplane, and people say, though, you seem very happy. So they can objectively see, but they won't, just like you're eating an apple and it makes smile, it's good. So some tastes like, you can only draw some kind of comparison, actually. You want to taste a mango, taste it. That's what it tastes like. There's a story in India about jackfruit. Jackfruit is very stringy, very sweet, but it's very hard. Now, so some Englishman came back to England, and he was saying that how wonderful jackfruit was. But then someone was asking to explain that, well, what does it taste like? So then he said, well, how do you explain how it tastes? Cut out. So then, he said, well, it tastes like if you have an old man, you see, with a long beard, and if you soak that in sweet juice and suck it, that's what jackfruit tastes like. Actually, I don't think it does justice to the fruit. But how do you explain to someone what something tastes like? But you can say that, well, it's salty, it's sweet, it's good, it's bad. There was apparently, you see, cyanide is one of the most deadly poisons. As soon as it touches your tongue, you die. So no one has been able to say what is the taste of cyanide. Other, you know, poison, it tastes bitter, it tastes sour, like that. So one scientist thought that for science, I'll stand here with a pen, and then I'll taste the cyanide and write down what is the taste. But for science, you know, you have to know these things, right? So then he was there, he tasted the cyanide, and he wrote F and died. But they don't know, salty, sweet, sour. Hare Krishna. So ready for the feast? And then you can see how it tastes. Hare Krishna.